corrections, amendments, or questions regarding the minutes?
Move approval of minutes.
Mr. Deegan moves approval. Is there a second?
Second, Mr. Chairman.
Second by Mr. Linton. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are accepted. We have three action items this morning. First one beginning with adjacent construction program. Good morning, Mr. Tangalini, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Couch.
Okay, good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Joining me on our first presentation, which will deal with the approval of the adjacent construction program, which has been an effort that we've undertaken with the developers in the community to figure out what works best for them so that we can expedite and work efficiently on our adjacent construction and joint development projects. So joining me to walk you through, take you through the presentation, to my immediate right is David Couch. He's our director of the Infrastructure Renewal Program. And to his right is Tom Robinson. He's the director of joint development and adjacent construction. And it will be Tom that will take you through the presentation. So Tom?
Okay. Good morning. Today's presentation is a follow-up to the P&D committee request of May 4th, 2006 to obtain industry input to changes of the adjacent construction manual and standardized processing of projects by WMATA, as well as to evaluate fee recovery methods for projects with specific attention to charges encountered by jurisdictional and compact agencies. On the screen, you'll see three photos of different projects. The top right is Columbia Heights Station looking east. The yellow building, if you will, is a joint development project, which is a mix of retail, residential, and parking. In the bottom left corner is an adjacent construction project. The top right photo, bottom left, right there is an adjacent construction project, which is underground parking and a retail complex. The bottom two photos are looking north from Eisenhower Avenue Station. On the left is facing north, looking at the inbound track, and that is a eight-level parking structure coming up out of the ground. And on the right is a residential retail complex, obviously under construction there. Proximity is about 25 to 30 feet from the structure itself. So we're close with the work. As far as changes to the manual, in response to the committee, the Office of Joint Development and Adjacent Construction conducted a session with industry and jurisdictional representatives having current or recent project involvement with WMATA. Initial session was conducted in August to review proposed changes of our policies, practices, and manual, solicit input from attendees on their experiences, and we provided copies of a draft manual for their review and comment. We also requested feedback in the form of a questionnaire. The session was facilitated and the turnout was very good. With the manual changes, we've included some flowcharts and graphics as a supplement to explain the process. The session also identified areas for attention, which included safety, and we've included additional information for use and location of equipment near our right-of-way and pedestrian areas, identified specific traffic devices and planned elements for consideration in developing the detours, lighting and partition construction to separate our active customer areas from the construction itself. We addressed submittal requirements and identified specific format and content requirements for typically encountered major submittals. We introduced the selective review program to lessen submittal burden and review efforts. And we've also included an option for an expedited review at premium cost to the project. With regards to track rights, we've standardized the nomenclature of the manual with our process. We've broken down the steps and requirements of the process, and we've introduced additional WMATA staff attention to process and prepare contractor requests for securing track rights. Insurance, we spelled out specific coverages required of the projects. And with regard to real estate issues, there are opportunities for contractors to need to utilize our property, and we've elevated this as an early action item. As-built records will be accessed for, at specific locations by the developers in our office, and we also ask them to provide as-built records when completed. The manual cover is up on the slide, and that photo is the DOT headquarters at the Navy Yard facility. With response to fee recovery, stated concerns were recovery of cost and assessment of charges to compact and jurisdictional agencies. The revisions are to not assess compact and jurisdictional agencies for project review and support costs, and to provide or implement a development, or we developed a fee schedule to assess adjacent construction projects. WMATA will continue to review impacts of all projects of and for WMATA interests. The fees are prepaid in full to assure recovery of WMATA costs. The fee schedule itself is based on readily identifiable and tangible measures to WMATA, those being level of support and project duration. The level of support is determined at initial project consultation meeting with the developer, and the duration is from initial WMATA involvement on the project through completion or no further construction-related exposure to WMATA. Fees are based on historical records of job cost and level of effort of support. Experience has been that shorter duration projects require more engineering support and less operation support, and longer projects require less engineering and heavier operating support costs. Provisions are included to review the fee schedule not less than annually to assure reasonableness and appropriateness of fees, as well as the method of recovery. Staff recommends approval of the fee structure presented and discussed.
Thank you. I'd like to make a couple of things clear as we start. First, the word joint development appears a lot, and you've got an example of a joint development project, I think, in the first thing you were showing. But this is not specifically about joint development.
The joint development program, we are the technical support and implementation of the program, essentially all.
The fee schedule that we have proposed before us is for all adjacent construction.
Correct.
That's correct.
The majority of cases not involving joint development.
That's correct.
Somebody happens to be building something, it happens to be near our facility, and so they have to come to us.
That's adjacent, yes.
It could be because they're near a tunnel and they're digging a garage. It could be because it's a sidewalk in front of a bus yard.
That's correct.
Okay. When we were here in May and you originally brought this forward, there were a number of comments and direction that was given as you went out, and some of the things I can see where they were addressed. Let me ask you, though, a couple of specific questions. One, this was brought to the JCC?
We involved jurisdictions. Invitations for the session went out specific to the JCC. They were not. We had initial discussions about a year and a half ago to broach it, and the response was to contact the jurisdictions directly.
Well, I agree that contacting them directly was important because there's other staff that you need to contact. But I also think that it's appropriate for something like this to get comments from the JCC. And I had thought that's one of the things we had asked you to do, but maybe we didn't. But we did ask you to certainly to look at jurisdictions, to talk to them, because there are analogous situations for every planning department in the region. My question is, as you went to the jurisdictions, what was the feedback, and in what ways have you adjusted the proposal? And I'm thinking both in terms of the level of the charges, the nature of the charges, and the procedural questions involved in this sort of permitting.
When you look at the fee structure and compare it to what's there for the jurisdictions, on our typical project, it would fall into the $50,000 to $75,000 range. The jurisdictions each one look at fees and charges slightly different. In some places, it's a percentage of construction cost, and a typical fee, if that's the way that the jurisdiction does it, might be in the $1 to $3 million range for fees on projects. Other jurisdictions deal with it with a much lower fee structure, and then go with adjacent improvements or proffers, but the level of effort and the charges against a project for each of the jurisdictions does come back in the $1 million-plus range. So the magnitude of the fees that we have structured in here is considerably less than what's there for any of the jurisdictions and is in line with what we believe the staff costs are to do the reviews and then to do the support of the projects in the field.
If I can add to that, part of the concerns we'd heard from people who are doing business with WMATA is they didn't know how long something was going to take. They didn't know how much it was going to cost. The uncertainty was making them very concerned about dealing with this. And we were getting this reputation, therefore, being very hard to deal with. We talked last time about some of the mythology about adjacent construction and the difficulty of dealing with this. What we're trying to do is lay out a very clear, predictable map that can be built into project budgets and then be able to move forward and let them have the uncertainty in things like the zoning process or other processes, but not in the adjacent construction.
Very good. We try to draw that information from the community. We actually had a series of workshops facilitated by a renowned architect, writer in the Washington Post. He's actually here today, Roger Lewis. And Roger facilitated those discussions to make sure that we could get through an independent source any comments, any opinions regarding the plan that we put forth. It has been out for comment for how long?
We had the session mid-August, August 17th.
So it's been out for comment since mid-August, and there have really been no comments from the industry. So we believe it's something that they embrace and think it's better than what we've done in the past.
This would apply to private development. It does not apply to the member governments that are part of the compact. The fee review cycle, I thought I heard you say annually, or not less than annually. I agree with the idea of having a review of the schedule on a regular basis. That seems pretty quick, though. Do you think that you'd want to adjust it more than once in 12 months? I mean, if we're talking about certainty and all that, doesn't that introduce more uncertainty?
What we're looking to do is to get a base and to get a better track record to make sure that we've got a good database to be able to then make the adjustments.
I mean, going into this now or this change now.
Right. And, of course, it'd be reviewed, updated, and submitted to the board for approval as necessary. So if the feeling was that we were just arbitrarily changing this too quickly, the board could put the brakes on that, because I think your point is a good one. What we're trying to do is establish some kind of certainty. Although even if the fee changes from year to year at a small level, that's much more certainty than they have now, in which people with a project, an adjacent construction project, simply get a bill at the end of the project.
Again, I understand with this being a new thing, you might need to do some fine-tuning on a shorter basis. Ultimately, I would assume that this would become like part of the annual budget approval.
Exactly right.
So, you know, every year you could look at it. Now, people do things differently, and certain kinds of fees in my county, for instance, are on a three-year review because we don't want to change them every year.
Right.
But we get through, you do a third of them every year, and that way they change. Other things get changed annually, but they're all part of the action on revenues as part of the budget. So it's also at a known time, and they go into effect with the fiscal year and that kind of thing. So I assume we'd try to move to something on that order of a regular cycle.
And I think that that's something we'll talk to you about in the FY08 budget, is having some kind of continual updating of our fees in a routinized basis, so that it doesn't, things don't lag and then have to catch up dramatically in 1 year, and that causes all kinds of implications for our customers as well as for those of us who are trying to run the service.
Right.
The other thing you'll notice in the resolution, the second to last resolve does make a commitment that at least the five people who support this program now remain in the budget. So at least we have the corporate knowledge and the abilities of ongoing projects to support them, as opposed to changing staff on an annual or fiscal basis. So just want to make sure you're aware of that that aspect of the resolution.
It doesn't in any way abrogate the board's ability, though, to modify that through the budget process. But that's our intention, is to make sure that we do, using the fee structure, express our interest in preserving that capacity.
Okay. I'll turn to any members. Mr. Huffman.
A couple of questions. I'm still a little unclear as to how this is taking place today. How do we know, how does the development community know that they should be submitting to our review? What is the hook? What is the thing that prompts that to take place?
There's two pieces to that. One is a lot of the major contractors are repetitious, and now that they have become used to building adjacent to our system, they know that's one of the steps in the process. The other is we may see, it may be a train operator, it may be a bus operator who will see something that is starting adjacent to our property. That may be the first indication, Mr. Kaufman, that we get something. We are not part of what you think of as the MISH utility program, as part of the local efforts, where there is an automatic notification or an automatic sign-off. That might be something to work toward in the future, so that there were a box to check, a box to check on that process, or in each one of the localities, that we would have some kind of a concurrence or contact on any permit that goes in.
Well, perhaps then, Dave, just as the chairman raised the issue of the ICC reviewing it, perhaps this is something we could kick to the ICC and say, guys, how do we ensure that, since these folks are hopefully applying for a permit with our jurisdictional governments, it's also
JCC.
ICC.
Where you? Gordon and I have ICC.
That's for TPP.
This is the NPO.
Check ICE while you're at it. Oh, well, that's worked better than the coffee to get me up. In any event, if we could submit that to the Interjurisdictional Coordinating Committee so they could give us some because otherwise, doing it by happenstance just doesn't cut it. The other question, I guess, so this is something that today, are we assessing fees or not?
What we do is we go through and look at the amount of work that's required on a project. We develop an estimate on what we feel that support is going to be. It's different for each project. And then we're required, since we have to have the funding in advance of the project, we then start sending out invoices and bills to go ahead and get everything on board to open up internal accounts to track costs. And there's a tremendous administrative process that we wind up going through.
Are folks paying?
For the most part, they are. This is something that is not a significant expense on a major project, but it does take a lot of administrative time. You get into some things also where you get to the end of a project, and then you have it's another item to close out. It's another small bill for somebody to have to pay. And there's a lot of administrative time spent chasing and tracking those kind of small dollar expenditures and receivables. So this gets it into a fixed price that we don't have to get through that process.
Okay. I think one of the important modifications also is the changes to the adjacent construction project manual to make that more straightforward, more obvious, how you would relate to Metro, how you would work together. And then if you have a clear fee structure based on duration of project, and then the ability to even expedite reviews and whatnot through a surcharge mechanism, I think what happens is the uncertainty associated with the adjacent construction part of the project, that goes away. And there are no surprise invoices or there's no running calls. And we don't spend a lot of administrative energy putting together bills and trying to track stuff down like that. So we both kind of save in that sense.
So I guess what we're lovingly saying is this is something we should have been doing a long time ago, and now we're finally doing it.
Okay. Yes. That's maybe how we'd characterize it.
Yeah.
Steve. I'm a little curious why this isn't before the Real Estate Committee, but I don't care much about that. You said you held workshops? And it was good attendance. Who was invited to the workshops?
We had developers, contractors, engineering firms, jurisdictions.
And none of these developers had any comments at the end?
We gave them the draft manual, and we gave them an overview of that. They were very appreciative on the explanation and the content of that manual, and there was limited comment back more towards insurance requirements, which we've addressed as far as the type coverage. Explanation of processes was the biggest thing we kept hearing, is like, when do I need to do this? What does it need to look like? We've explained that in better detail, have some examples, have some flow charts to clue them in on it.
And this fee schedule would apply to our joint development projects as well as adjacent?
Adjacent only.
Adjacent only. Okay, that clears something up for me. And Dan, you just mentioned the expedited review premium. In a former life, I ran a department of licenses and permits, and one thing I kept hearing from people that needed the licenses and permits was they really didn't care about the cost as long as they could go in, get it reviewed, and get their permit. My thought is, how many of these people are going to come in for the expedited permit and forgo the regular process, and what happens to the guy that's in the pipeline all along? And then I come in with my millions and say, I want to be first.
Right. I mean, what we've designed is a program that has a 30-day review period. Point is, in some cases, people come in and say, I need it within 15 days to close the mortgage. And so we would juggle around, probably juggle around priorities, but the focus is on making sure that everyone gets at least 30 days. We did want to have an option, though, that if people are pressed, are in a hurry, that they have the ability to buy a space in the queue if there's a financing issue associated with it. We get those requests now. We will work very hard to try to address those requests because we don't want to ever be the excuse, frankly, or the reason why a project doesn't get through. But when people call and say, I need it tomorrow, we want to make sure that they have a cost associated with it. If we are going to drop things, get out, you know, slow down on someone else's to do this person.
I guess what I'm saying, I don't want it to look like we're holding up somebody.
Well, the other piece that we've got and the ability that we have is that we've got the on-call engineering consultant. So if we have things that are a rush that have to get done, and if we don't have sufficient staff because we're set for the normal process, then we can call in that resource through our on-call engineering consultant. And that's a way that we can use if we don't have the staff available to meet that expedited review process.
And then the premium allows us to pay them, so we're not paying for that force extension.
Exactly the way it was put together.
All right.
Thank you, Mr.
Yes, thank you. So, in your opinion, based upon the workshops and so forth, this is not viewed as this is not a deterrence in any way, shape, or form. This is going to be welcomed. And it will help all parties involved, both us and those that are attempting to work on adjacent property. Okay.
Is that it? You didn't have a motion.
Somebody want to make a motion around here?
We got a resolution in front of us. It's page 16.
Yeah, I'll move a motion that we approve the resolution as presented.
Mr. Briscoe moves that we approve the resolution and forward to the board.
Second
by Mr. Deegan. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Mrs. Mack.
I want to recognize that Ms. Michelle Cusheau is here with us today.
Yeah. We're glad to see her.
And with the board's permission, I'd like to invite her to sit at the table.
I think that's a very good idea.
She will become a board member in due time.
We'd like to have her right here.
So we welcome her to the table, and we will formally welcome her when all of the action at the council has been completed. Initiated, but not completed.
Then we'll begin the blood rite of initiation here. Best they don't know what the haze is.
I warned her. She came anyway.
Starts the reason she's here.
Like lambs to slaughter.
I've had the pleasure of serving with Mr. Cho at the Transportation Planning Board for a number of years now, and I will just say I'm very much looking forward to her joining the team here. We have an item now on platform rehabilitation. Ms. Higgins?
Yes, joining me with the table is Joe Triola, who's the project manager, senior project manager for this project, and to Joe's right is Ed Riley. He's our manager of architecture, and Joe will take you through the presentation, and Ed Riley will talk with you about the title of the presentation.
Very good.
Bring everyone's interest.
Mr. Triola and Mr. Riley, good morning.
Go ahead, Joe. Okay.
Good morning. We'd like to present the platform rehabilitation at Minnesota Avenue in Greenwood Stations, and as part of that, the implementation of a new platform tile standard that will be used for this project, Dulles Extension, future new construction, and similar platform rehabilitation work. Minnesota and Greenwood Stations were constructed prior to 1978. The platform slabs have deteriorated to such an extent, you can see through our pictures up there, that the patching and grouting will not be sufficient. Replacement of significant portions of the platform are necessary. That's required to ensure that overall safety and longevity of the structure. Deterioration is greatest and replacement needed in the platform edges under the canopy and also on the entire platform width outside the canopy limits. And This requested action that we're coming before you today would replace both the inbound and outbound platform edge beneath the canopies, and this would be more or less like a pilot or first phase program. And based on the experience we get with this and the lessons learned, we would come back and do the full platform width at some future date. And the idea here is to. For the precast platform sections, we would have the platform tile installed before the precast sections are set, and that way we would minimize construction time greatly. We wouldn't impact operations for such a length, and minimize the inconvenience to the passengers. Now, I guess the big component of this replacement is the new tile standard that we want to use. It's a 12-inch by 12-inch square porcelain tile, and you can see this is a. Can I go back to the other? This would be the concept here at the platform edges. There's approximately 7 foot 6 inch. How does this work? Yeah. There's approximately 7 foot 6 inch cantilever length that would be replaced from there to there, and that would be cast with the before it's installed. The porcelain tile is 12 inches by 12 inches. The band of dark tile would be the ADA tile, which would be similar to the bumpy tactile or bumpy tile would be similar to what we're using now. But everything would be 12 by 12, and there's several advantages to using the porcelain tile. We'll have improved slip resistance. The maintainability and durability would be improved. And the strength of the tile is greater than the quarry tile. And we're having a problem now with availability of the quarry tile because less and less manufacturers are making this, and this seems to be more in mode at this period. And the moisture penetration of this tile is much, much less than the quarry tile, and we can make the joints tighter, which would for durability. The samples you see there are ones we got from the one of the manufacturers. That'll give you an idea of the texture and the size. But as far as the color goes, right now I believe that
The manufacturers are doing tests to get a color. We wanted a color that's going to match the terracotta color that we have on our hexagon tiles. This particular one is this is a tile that's used in the New York City Transit, and that's a standard color they have, but was we considered too light for our system. We wanted to historically keep the same palette that we have in the system now and have the terracotta color, which is a little redder and a little darker.
That's actually one of the points that I think needs to be remade, is that This is a type of tile that they're using in New York City. They've had 5 years of experience with it, and that would be something that we could share with the transit property and share suppliers and share the purchasing on. So that would save us money and over the long term create shared sources for this material.
Yeah, that one thing that got us interested in this particular tile, we have been looking at other manufacturers of porcelain tile. Porcelain tile is a later generation tile. The tile that's in the system now is a 30-year-old technology that is not used that often right now. It's used primarily in kitchens. This tile is can be cut more precise so that the joints can be much smaller as opposed to the smaller hexagon tile. The other thing I might mention is that the bumpy tile would also be in the same coloration once we've got that settled, at, just
bumpy
like
tile
it is now.
The technical name
that,
for
the truncated domes. Yeah, the bumpy tile.
I know the colloquial, you know.
And the same coloration as?
As the existing tile, the reddish terracotta tile. The existing tile has what they call a flash in it. We would it's that kind of dark color that goes to kind of a lighter color. But we would probably have the same color. And what we've given the manufacturers is the reddish color of the terracotta tile that's in the system now.
This has a number of other properties that we heard mentioned before. The fact that we would use precast concrete sections and actually tile them ahead of time. This is a very fast, cost-effective, high-quality form of construction method because you're able to control the quality of the actual product in a manufacturing environment, and you can also install it much quicker. We've done experiment with a form of precast track panels, laying track panels in. We think that this is the kind of approach more and more you're going to see as we deal with the rehabilitation of the system, trying to find ways we can more quickly rehabilitate these areas that are beginning to show wear and return them to the customers at a full service level. This also reflects 30 years of experience with these tiles, 30 years of experience of what it's been like in these environments, and we just found that our original design simply didn't work the way we wanted it to in terms of longevity. And so the reason why we're spending so much time here, frankly, is that the hexagonal tile of that certain color is a signature element, in a way, of the Metro design. And so if we are proposing to change that, we wanted to make sure that the board had an involvement in that discussion and an opportunity to inform us and participate in that conversation.
You got one more page because it has the recommendation. Why don't we do that?
Yeah, so the recommendation is to initiate and award a contract for this phase one rehabilitation and replacement of the platform slab underneath the canopy edges, and also part of that to change the flooring standard, the tile standard design for the rehabilitation of the Minnesota and Deanwood stations and for the future Metro stations.
Okay, so the first part of it is work you would actually do at those two stations.
That's correct.
And also you want to change the standards overall that would govern future. And that's the request. Okay, discussion is committee. Mr. Riscuzzo.
Yeah, my question is, when we originally went with the plan 30 years ago, what was the life expectancy? You know, just like when you have a roof, I mean, did we plan for this? Are there reserves, or did it looks like the answer was we didn't know, and the answer is no?
Well, I think the life expectancy of tile is usually pretty long, depending on the abuse it gets. Of course, the transit environment is pretty abusive. I think we found that the life expectancy is 20 to 30 years. But I must say that one of the main driving factors is not so much that the tile is always falling apart, it's the slipperiness of the tiles. Currently, it meets the coefficient of friction for the ADA, which is put in our specifications. Over years and over time, 20, 30 years, it gets a little smoother. And what we were looking for is a tile that has a much higher coefficient of friction, which this particular tile had way above that what we even expected. And that's what the study that New York City did. They actually did a study 3 years looking for something was, besides maintainability and holding up, was the slip resistance, the coefficient of friction.
What's the coefficient of friction on the existing tile?
The existing, the specifications call for 0.6, which is what the ADA minimum is. So our tiles are probably 0.6 or a little above.
And these?
These are 0.7 to 8 when it's wet. They actually, I was kind of astonished, the coefficient of friction goes up when it's wet.
I want to make sure everybody caught that. These, in general, have more. You get more traction on this than you would the existing tiles.
Yeah,
but when it gets wet, when the tiles we have now get more slippery.
They get more slippery.
These actually have a higher coefficient of friction when they're wet than
that's what the, that's what the specifications from the manufacturer. This is a testing method that's done in the laboratory using an ASTM testing method.
Can I add one more thing about the life expectancy? The life expectancy changes depending on the environment it's in. And what we're dealing with are the outdoor sections where the tile actually has suffered greatly because of its porosity and because of where it's affixed, and then just the outside environment is much rougher on this on these hexagonals.
Yeah, it's not only the tile. It's not so much always the tile being damaged. It's the water getting in between the joints of the tile, getting into the concrete. And that's why we were also interested in the more exact size and the lesser of the joints that you can prevent water you can prevent more water going into the slab down below. We're also introducing on above ground stations probably a membrane that would go underneath that would be kind of a second line of defense. But this tile also is more impervious. It's a harder, denser material. As opposed to the quarry tile, which is more porous.
And my understanding is this is not like, you don't have like a layer on top of it here that's providing the friction. It's the design of the material all the way through.
So the material goes, the material goes all the way through the material, through the tile. And the test that were done in New York, they actually came up with a minimum thickness of 5/8 inch. They don't recommend anything below that because that you could have cracking occurring if you had heavy weight loads such as money carts and things like that rolling across them. And I think they have this installed in like 28 stations in New York. And I think they had one tile that cracked that was because it was installed incorrectly.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My question is similar to the questions that have been asked. Is this the first time that we have replaced tile in any of our stations?
No, we've continuously replaced tile as necessary, but we've replaced it with the hexagonal quarry tile.
Right.
This is the first time we're changing to the porcelain larger tile. Yes.
And so, but this, I noticed this action, I guess the tile for these two stations is $2.8 million.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. Well, bear in mind, it's more than just the tile. It's the cushion. The larger portion of is the structure. If you recall back from the earlier photos, we're actually replacing the subfloor for the tile. That's the major cost.
So this is the first time we've had this kind of massive substitution of one product
right.
for another.
And it lends itself to making a change to the tile, because one of the other things that I don't believe we touched on is that there's only one quarry tile manufacturer. Somewhere along the line, we're going to find ourselves in a position where we might not be able to buy large quantities of quarry tile as we move forward. So we're trying to take advantage of that, along with the fact that the quarry tile over years, there's other technologies out there that give us a longer life than the quarry tile did when we made that decision back in the 60s and 70s. So we're taking advantage of the technology changes.
Our feeling is if we hitch our wagon, if you will, to New York City MTA, that's not a bad partner to be working with in terms of making sure that there's at least one manufacturer out there that's going to continue to provide us this this material.
Right. So in the future, I guess we've identified other stations where we may be using this application
yes.
in the future instead of what we might have been doing. And I was just concerned about the cost, and the budget line item has, it says, $49 million. And I guess there is an itemization of that $49 million somewhere so that the funds that we're using for this can be narrowed down to some extent in a smaller piece
maybe,
of that.
Maybe to get to the point, the tile is not the cost portion here. The tile cost compared to the quarry tile, porcelain
no,
versus quarry,
that
cost is about the same.
Sure. But you're saying that the fact that you're redoing the
good portion of these station platforms.
And if you would be doing that in the future, any future budget estimates, I'm assuming, would include costs similar to what we have here.
Yes.
And so my question is, in terms of what is budgeted, it says that we've got $49 million budgeted for right-of-way structural rehabilitation. So is that just kind of a big pot, and we do
yes.
out of it whatever comes up to be done?
That's correct. To handle projects, structural projects of this type.
Okay, and that $49 million is available for this fiscal year?
Yes. This is over. I don't know how much of it's available for this fiscal year.
I don't have the exact.
This is over a 3-year period.
This is part of the Metro Matters program. It's for structural rehabilitation. As you know, the Metro Matters was an estimated capital program for certain categories that we needed to make investments in. This is one of those categories, and this is one of the investments we're making in structural rehabilitation against that overall budget. If you're interested in hearing how we propose to spend the balance, then that's something we could provide you.
Well, not at this meeting, but certainly at the budget committee, we might be interested in that.
I think perhaps the fate of this issue, though, is being decided not at this table, but at the one over there, where it would appear that Ms. Sun does not approve of the proposal, and I wonder about what we're going to be reading about it tomorrow. Someone who's obviously bought tile before.
Right,
you brought your own sample. I saw you take it out.
She took it from one of our stations.
Various cheap hands. So you're comparing that to what this is? And I'm just fascinated to know what it is you're looking at in the one that
you want to color?
Caused you to shake your head at me before.
The color.
Oh, it's the color. We agree.
Yeah, this one will be the lifestyle section of the book.
Are you kidding? It'll be in every section of the book. It'll be a metro story, a style story, and an A1 story.
There's the home section.
As I said, I think the fate may be decided by others than those who are sitting at this particular table. So we probably ought to pay attention. So let me ask Ms. Sun's question, which is, can the color here be made to more closely match
the
terracotta, for lack of a better term?
Yes.
We've asked the manufacturers that are actually, they're actually mocking up new custom tile based on the terracotta color of the existing tile that we gave them. And they're going to do a range for us. They're actually producing it now at the plant.
Okay, so we'll see something to see how close it is to the traditional metro.
We actually told them that the New York City color was not acceptable to our system, and we historically want to keep the same terracotta color. Traditionally, porcelain tiles are a little lighter, although they can make them darker, and we've requested it, and we've been told that this should be no problem, and they just want to make sure they get a color that's close to what we are looking for.
Okay, I can see Ms. Sun visibly relieved. No? Oh, I'm getting there. That's the next question. I knew that was your next question. So the next question is, can this be cut in an hexagonal form as opposed to a square?
Probably not. The other issue with one reason that we went to the square was because to cut down the number of.
I understand. You can talk about why you want to do it this way. My question is there any reason the manufacturer can't cut this in a hexagon?
We asked them. They said that it can only be produced in rectangular shapes.
I wonder what that would be, and I wonder what answer someone else is going to get when they ask that question. I expect someone else is going to ask that question.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible that you could find a way to do it. What would that cost?
Sure.
Would money be spent on
it? And then there's the reasons why you want fewer joints, which
and
then, also
well, and that's not an insignificant reason. The fact is we're trying to make a repair that lasts. And at some point we have to ask ourselves, okay, what is our balance of investment here? Is it between preserving a decision that was made, a design decision that was made 30 years ago that I think we've all gotten accustomed to. But if it doesn't have duration to it, then we're going to have to continue to make investments. And what I'm afraid is more and more people are getting accustomed to broken tile rather than high-quality tile. And so that's I think, where we're having this discussion. I know a lot of the questions we've been asking over the last few months have revolved around, you know, our original design and what things look like and what people have come to expect. The question is, what can we afford to maintain and continue to provide high-quality service given the number of people who are here using our service?
I think that's well said, Mr. Tangerlini. But I also, before you got onto this board, we had a little discussion about canopies. Right? I remember we had a very practical solution that was going to allow us to cover every station with canopies, every exposed escalator. And it seemed very practical. I thought it was reasonably attractive. And the budget would have covered it. Then other people got a hold of it and talked about design things, and then we had a design competition, and then we had a much nicer canopy, I must say. But, of course, we don't have the money to do all the canopies over all the escalators, and that's frequently what happens. And other people make the decisions. So I expect we're going to have some discussion about this, whether we like it or not. Mr. Lennon.
I think my questions have been answered. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Deegan.
Just one. Have we shown any of this to the Riders Advisory Council?
People who have done nothing.
I don't think we've talked to them about it. I don't think we had the sample in time to show them. I only got this sample about a week or so ago.
You know, that's kind of what I envisioned having the rack for, to look at this type of stuff.
Yep.
Feedback to us. And now you bring it to us before it goes to them.
Well, I don't have a problem with the fact that they brought it to us first, but I do think before we act on it, we would want to get input from the Riders.
So they wanted us to act today.
Well, it's a recommendation of the committee. But. Mr. Coffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, frankly, I welcome anything that's a step further away from Metro as a dark, slippery cave. you know, we've added the enhanced lighting. As a person who has slipped on tiles more than once, I swear architects must never wear hard leather-soled shoes, because I literally go from walking to skating, and that's fundamentally not safe. So I think, frankly, it's an overdue change. While it may be a step away from the way we've always done things, that's why we have a policy-making board.
And I'm not opposed.
The other thing, I would imagine the maintenance cost would be a lot easier. It'd also be simpler to put in place. As a person who's done two bathrooms and a foyer, I'd rather lay that tile than hexagon. The other thing, though, going back to Mr. Deegan's comment, having been on this board, I know with Ms. Mack and I think with Mr. Zimmer and Mr. Graham as well, when we did the truncated domes, we do need to make certain that our sight-impaired community particularly is attuned to this change, supportive of it. That's the only real concern I have, to make certain that they understand it and embrace it. But beyond that, just the simple fact of whenever those yellow pyramids go up that say that the floor is wet, I know I automatically tense up, and I'm sure most of our riders do as well. So thank you, Dan, for bringing this forward.
Other discussion? Sure. Ms. Burchell.
I'd just like to add that in the district we use brick in historic areas, and we found they're small, similar shape. And we're really trying to move away from cutting those little brick pieces next to utility holes and what have you. And we've worked a lot with the historic preservation community that didn't initially like the idea of moving away from brick all the way up, but the practicality of it is one that I think we share here, that, you know, if we're ending up with little pieces that don't stay and get broken, then in the end we have an inferior product. So I think more communication is definitely in line, but it seems to be a great product.
Any other discussion? All right, we have to decide what we're going to do. Deegan, you got some ideas about that? Your recommendation to the board should be?
I would like to go ahead and make the motion to approve the recommendation today, but not bring it to the board until it's been before the Rogers Advisory Council, which will have the effect of delaying it a month.
I'm sympathetic to that idea. Does that create some major problem we ought to know about, Mr. Tangerlini, Ms. Haggins?
No. If we could somehow or another do the initiate an award, move forward with the first part of the recommendation, so we can get that portion started, and then we'll come back and address the tile, because the tile is the finished piece of this project. The major cost and major need right now is the repair, what you saw in the earlier photos. So we would like to start preparing.
How do you separate the initiation award of a contract from the selection of a tile?
We can initiate an award, but we don't have to include the final decision on the color and the selection of the tile in that procurement. We can do an option to address that as well.
I mean, it's really the icing on the cake. We're talking about the cake, and that is actually rebuilding those platform edges,
all the other parts that aren't.
All the other parts. And then we would hold off on, you know, we would say tile as specified, and we would move forward on getting a specification. So it's that second part of the action, which is the tile specification, that we would then come back and seek approval from the board in November.
I would accept that.
That seems reasonable to me. And I think you could take it as direction here that we're interested in seeing the color and, you know, what can be done to get the color as close as possible to the what we've used. Of course, that doesn't mean we wouldn't look at something else either, but, you know, people want to see the degree to which we can match the existing color with the new product. And I think there's probably also interest, unless people disagree, in getting a more of an explanation of what the possibilities would or would not be for matching the hexagonal form that we've had. And, you know, there are good reasons that will be given for why we wouldn't want to do that, but I think we ought to know what the options are before we make a final decision. And then we'd like the Rogers Advisory Council to have an opportunity for that presentation.
Mr.
Grant.
My only concern here, and I do think we need to move rapidly through this, is that this is a pilot action, right? This is a pilot action.
Yes.
That involves $2.8 million, and we're going to do two stations. And this may be somewhat repetitive, but just repeat it quickly, which is if we change the tile on all the stations, what would be the cost?
No, the tile is, there's not a difference between the porcelain and this.
So we're just going to do these two stations and stop?
Right now, that's what we're proposing.
No, it's the ultimate plan. I mean, if you're happy with, well, I don't know, you surely know you could put 10 of these on the floor and walk on them and you'd have an idea of how they work, you know. You're going to do it in two stations, and presumably you're going to be happy with what happens in those two stations. So if you want to take all of this into all the stations, what would be the projected cost?
I don't think we're proposing to
go
retrofit the entire. I mean, that's a hypothetical. I don't think we've contemplated, because we're not thinking about going back to all 86 stations at once and replace all.
No,
the tile.
I understand that, Mr. Tangerlini. I understand that, but I'm just saying if we're going to do it in two stations, there's at least the possibility of us extending this to other stations. Is there
as
not?
Needed. Oh, no, that's
needed, I assume. Pardon
me?
Yeah, as needed, I assume.
As needed.
As needed.
So that it would only be on an as needed basis.
As needed basis.
So that the tile that our Washington Post reporter has apparently carried off.
Right.
is evidence of a serious repair need.
Yes.
And so in that situation, we would act, right?
Well, depending on the situation, if it's simply a tile, we'd replace the tile. If it's broader issue associated with the platform, we would program it for platform replacement, and then that would be right. Where we would see.
So that then leads, I'm kind of rushing because I didn't want to extend this any further than I needed to, but then how many stations do you think are going to be in need of this rehabilitation? Do you have any sense of that?
Right now
we're evaluating all the stations that were constructed before 1984. That's approximately 23 stations. Right.
And we don't have that'll be done by the end of the year. There's localized areas that have been identified in four of the stations. But if it's just to go in and replace like a 16-foot eight section of a platform in one station, we would use the hexagonal tile, the quarry tile.
So the answer is that we don't know at this point.
Right.
how many other stations would require this type of extensive rehabilitation.
Or if they would, yeah.
Or if they would.
The biggest impact, of course, would be Dulles. Dulles would use the new tile.
If we actually build that.
But that's a different issue altogether.
I don't think so.
Oh, really?
The new stations. What's the
same? If you're building a new station, then you have to put tile on the floor.
Exactly. But on the old station, you have to put tile if you have to replace it.
Right. But I just wanted to get a sense of how many stations they thought would require this type of major rehabilitation. And the answer is, you don't know.
But I think that that's an important question, but I assume it's independent of the action today, because even if we weren't doing this, we'd have to be doing replacement on.
It is somewhat independent, but I think relevant.
Yeah. Mr. Lake.
I was just trying to provide some clarity to this. Hopefully, I think we've gotten there. But I think it seems to me that the cost of this is pretty negligible. In fact, there's, if we were to replace and use the same tie that we currently have, the cost wouldn't be any different.
That's correct.
So all we're basically saying is, as we go to replace or redo an entire station, we will use better tile that will give us more longevity but also traction for our customers.
Absolutely.
So what we would think about is new stations and any total rehab of any of our existing stations.
That's correct.
We would use this tile if we find it acceptable.
I think you need to add to that. If you use this kind of tile to begin with, probably wouldn't be rehabbing these stations right now. So that's
available
long term.
30 years ago.
Yeah, right. It wasn't available 30 years ago. And the hexagonal shape contributed to it because of all the joints allowed water to creep in to undermine through freeze thaw break up the concrete that we're actually now replacing. So in that sense it's a longer term cost avoidance issue and that would be even harder to estimate, frankly.
That's very helpful. Very helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Coffin. Certainly, I just wanted to formally ask that the specifications on this tile be passed along to our folks with the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transit for them to consider incorporating it into the rail extension.
Yes.
You know, quite frankly, safety trumps aesthetics for me any day of the week. Mm-hmm. The other thing I just ask colleagues to keep in mind is that even our most one of our more sacred symbols here at Metro, the coffered ceiling that we see at our underground stations, that's because the architectural firm that did the design was using that same design in their Safeways as they were designing them. So this sacred relic that will go down in history is because that's what 1950s Safeways look like. So if our 21st century safety demands say get us a tile that actually holds your feet when they're wet, let's do it.
All right, Mr. Deegan.
What are the other two stations?
We're the closest two stations that we think need major rehab.
Well, as far we know of four stations that have localized problems.
And they are?
They are Rockville, Shady Grove, Tacoma, and Brooklyn.
That's four and four. So it's now four instead of two?
No, two.
No,
these two, but are there two more? Four more?
Jim said there was two more.
No,
now there's four.
There's no more. Right now, there's no more at this level. The four that I mentioned have localized problems that wouldn't require.
They don't have the structural problem.
Oh.
So it's just a tile replacement.
Stand correct.
Basically, you got these two that have really bad problems.
Right.
That's why they're on the top of the list. And of the subset of all our stations, 23 of them that are of that age, those are all being evaluated, and some subset of them will come up in some priority order for rehab and replacement. It may turn out that most of them don't need very much. It may turn out a bunch of them have significant problems, but you're pretty sure they're not going to be as bad as these stations.
Okay, are we ready to vote?
I would love to. I believe Mr. Deegan was moving that we approve forward to the board the initiation award of a competitive contract for phase one, etc., but that we carry over part two pending additional information and comments from the RAC.
That's correct.
Is that your motion?
That's my motion.
All right, thanks. Is there a second to Mr. Deegan's motion? Seconded by Mr. Grant. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And one more action item, Navy Yard Station Construction. Who's handling this one, Mr. Higgins?
John Thomas, who's our acting director of construction, will take you through the construction agreement for the Navy Yard Station entrance modifications.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We're here to talk about the Navy Yard Station and the proposed construction agreement to get some modifications done to one of the entrances there. The area where the Navy Yard Station is in Southeast D.C. has been experiencing a lot of development in recent years. There's a lot more development planned in that area. The ridership at Navy Yard Station we expect to increase significantly. There was a major development announcement about 2 years ago called the baseball stadium going to that area. It's about one block from the west entrance to the Navy Yard Station. The existing configuration of that station is shown here. That entrance itself can handle about 5,000 people an hour. The entrance at the other end of the station, what we call the east end, can handle about 2,600 people an hour. To handle that growth of the development as well as the baseball stadium about 15 months ago, we proposed to the board that we make some modifications to that entrance. We established the project budget at that time to do some preliminary design. The idea was to do what we did at the convention center, which was to extend the mezzanine, add some vertical transportation, in this case an escalator and a stair, as well as some elevators, and increase the number of fare gates. The goal was to increase the capacity of this entrance to 15,000 people per hour. Subsequent to that action, we were working on some different designs, and one of the ideas that we came up with was, instead of doing what we did then, which could be very difficult, you imagine building 100 feet of a platform or a mezzanine over two live tracks, we thought about the idea of actually trying to do it maybe simpler and pull those features, particularly the kiosk and the fare gates and vendors, to the surface. Well, about the time we did that, we got an unsolicited proposal for our properties, that one that surrounds the existing entrance and one that is immediately adjacent to it. So what we've come up with is the idea of having the entrance modifications done as part of the adjacent office building and having those facilities brought up to the surface, which again we thought would be the simpler way of doing it. So what you see on the screen now is in the sort of the orangish yellow is where our facilities would be on the street level within an office building bounded by Half Street, M Street, and Cushing Place Southeast. And this would be, so people would come in. The idea is that the entrance would be right about here. The people would come in, and flow down the escalators, and then go into the station that's down underneath M Street. And that this would be done concurrently with the construction of an office building. And we're also adding in this location an elevator from the surface to the mezzanine. There currently is not an elevator at this entrance. There's a single elevator at the other entrance. So we thought it would be important for those people who need to use elevators to have access to one, particularly if they were at a ball game. The next slide shows what the configuration is down at the bottom, at the mezzanine level where the elevator lands. And then, more importantly, the changes that we're going to be making in the train room. The kiosk, you can almost see here very faintly, currently sits right there, and then the fare gates are splayed out on either side. So that would go away and go up to the surface, and what we're going to do is add a stair and add an elevator. The stair gets us to that capacity with the two existing escalators and the one stair. Next slide. This is the most recent rendering that we received from the developer for what their office building is going to look like. This is M Street facade. Our entrance is within here. This is the Half Street facade, so if you were standing at our bus garage looking to the east, this is what you would see. And our entrance is right here. The baseball stadium is off to the right of this, so people would come up Half Street and go in right there or exit there to go down to the stadium prior to a game.
If I can interrupt for a second, that's one of the that's one of the quality elements of this approach, is that you actually have people queuing on the surface rather than queuing on the stairs. That's a big issue at the Verizon Center. It's a big issue at the Stadium Armory, is that we actually have to stop people, and certainly that's why we closed Smithsonian on 4th of July, is because we would have to stop people at the top of the stairs. This allows us to actually meter input into the station at the fare gates themselves on the surface. The other thing we've done is, following in the example of Boston West, where we've used a staircase instead of a new escalator as a way to get people from the mezzanine level down to the platform and get that extra capacity at a lower cost and a lower longer-term maintenance.
Well, what about from the ground level to the mezzanine level? I saw three escalators. I didn't see stair inserted there.
We originally had hoped to put a stair in there, but we were hearing some dollar figures that scared us off from adding a stair to this configuration.
That's not my question. My question is, given that last week or a week before we were hearing about possibly spending money to convert escalators to stairs, one you haven't built, why wouldn't you build a stair in place?
We're using the existing escalators. Escalator structure.
It's all existing.
Yeah, so the only place where we're actually building something, only place we're adding stairs.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's the existing.
And an elevator, because there's no elevator here from the surface to the mezzanine or the platform. So this allows for ADA accessibility.
So when I look at this, that set of elevators, for instance, and obviously you have the gate above, I guess that's what's off to the left there. So at the ground level, I go through a fare gate, and then I get on the elevator, which takes me straight there.
Yeah, here's our elevator. This is the elevators for the office building. These are separate from us. There's a wall there. But that's our elevator right there.
Okay, what I thought was a fare gate over here? What is this down to the left?
Right here?
No, to the left, on the orange part. That there, what is all that?
That's our kiosk, and these are our fare gates. So this is the free area, and this is the paid area.
All right, how do I get to that free area?
Right here. This is the entrance off of Half Street. So you come in right here and go through and down.
I see. I go through that. Okay. And the escalator, the elevator there would be new, or is that existing?
That's a new elevator at this location.
The escalators there are existing?
Those are three existing escalators.
But we don't have an elevator there, so we get a new elevator.
That's correct.
Okay. I got you.
If you go ahead to...
Just a quick question. What is the depth of that escalator? What...
About 50 feet. It's very long. Yeah. If you go one more. Mr. Zimmerman, this is the area I was just pointing to on the plan. That's where the entrance, the doors would be, if you will, to go from the street into the free area, into our area. The next slide gives general terms of the construction agreement. We're working on. It's a three-party agreement between Metro, the developer, and their contractor. We're working on a guaranteed price that has not been negotiated. It is a work in progress. There are incentives in the GMP to reduce the cost. Specifically, once we get to a point and the contractor does some bidding, which is the next item there, which they have not done at this point. If they've come in with, example, in their GMP for $1 million worth of electrical work, and they bid it and they come in at $800,000, the incentive to get the subcontractors to bid that lower is that the general contractor will share in the savings associated with the lower bid cost compared to their estimate. So that's the incentive to get the number down. The contractor self-performed work. Their bonds and insurance will be audited to make sure that the costs are fair and reasonable. The work is scheduled for completion on April 2nd, 2008. That's when we would open it up. That's assuming work starts by the end of this year. And an important piece of information here, the modifications will be performed to our standards and criteria, and we will be out there inspecting and accepting the work. The next slide is the recommendation. This recommendation that's on the screen that the board members have is different than what the audience has in its handout. Since we don't have a GMP negotiated, we're still negotiating. What we're seeking is for the Planning and Development Committee to concur and forward to the general manager the authority to execute the construction agreement once we have the final terms developed. And an important note here is that this action is in conjunction with the Navy Yard Joint Development. As you can see, we will be talking about this at our real estate executive session to follow.
Mr. Grant.
Thank you. Are you finished?
Yes, sir.
Good. Because I know we've got some time restraints. This is a very important action. Actually, it's the second part of a very important action that this board has taken to address the critical issue of how we get people, you know, to the stadium and back home for a baseball game. And, of course, as some of you may know from reading the Washington Post and other sources, we're struggling on the Council of the District of Columbia with the whole issue of parking and how many thousands of spaces are going to be required and who's going to pay for them and so on and so forth. Critical to that whole discussion is this issue today. And, Mr. Thomas, I appreciate the way in which you described this, but I would make a little bit of a friendly dissent in that this did not kind of fall together. You know, this took an awful lot of work by a lot of people. Mrs. Mack was involved. I was very much involved. The developers were involved in figuring out how we could move as rapidly as possible to put into place this expansion and rehabilitation of this Navy Yard station. And so this represents not really a set of coincidences as much as it represents a huge amount of work. The mayor has been involved, his people have been involved, Mr. Pangolini and so on, to bring us to this point where we have the adjacent developer, you know, who has already been awarded, you know, development rights on certain metro land in this area, to also handle the construction at the very same time as that developer is building an office building. And so it makes perfectly good sense, assuming that we have certain controls in place. And, of course, we're all interested in exercising our prudent responsibilities in that regard. So I appreciate what you've said, and you're correct, but I wanted to add that. I wanted to also emphasize the importance of this action today in terms of making the baseball stadium work, because the current Navy Yard station would simply be overwhelmed to the great detriment not only of the people who are coming to the game, but also to the system that we have at Metro. I mean, it would just be a disaster. So anyway, with that in mind, I just have a couple of questions. What can we do? I see work is scheduled for completion on April the 2nd, 2008.
That's correct.
I think that's when the whole parking issue has to be in place. I appreciate your expression about how you're going to monitor this and so on and so forth. But, Mr. Tanglerini, I'm wondering how we can strengthen this in terms of the developer so that we can be more assured that these deadlines are met. What can we have in this contract that would reinforce this deadline?
We actually have some penalties that involve the contractor actually providing transportation bridge service to L'Enfant Plaza Metro Station if this isn't open in time. And so there's a severe financial and operational penalty to the developer if they don't have our station ready for us on April 2nd, 2008.
Is there more that we can do?
You have to get at the pocketbook. And the pocketbook is you can put LDs in there to hit them with fines and that, but we thought that instead of just hitting their pocket, hit their pocketbook, but also force them to perform and to provide a bus bridge, whether that is paying us to provide our buses, which only could happen after games, because before games we're all tied up at rush hour. They'll have to rent buses to provide, to augment the people who would be using the system anyways to get there, provide bus service to sort of try to parallel that.
I mean, I think there's something more you could try to do. The question is, what can you actually get done before you get them to walk away from the deal? And this is a you're right. This is not something that just fell together. There are hours and hours of staff time. Carol O'Keefe, Gary Malasky, a lot of folks have been working really hard to pull this together. And I think we've gotten it to the point where we think we've got the best deal we can get to move this forward. And we have been paying very close attention to that deadline because that's really the key. That's absolutely the key to making sure this is successful.
Well, in terms of the, well, I don't know whether the monument is going to walk away. I mean, I suppose in an extreme case they would walk away, but this is so integral, so interrelated to everything they're doing on this site that I guess this is a board action item, you know, in
part of the reason
a minute and a half.
Right.
But, you know, I had I been more aware of this and had I been in town for the last 10 days, I would have pressed for something more substantial, even though what you have is pretty good. Can we look at the budget information just for a moment? Because on page 29, the proposed budget is $20 million.
Yes, sir.
But you don't note the fact that this that we do have a commitment from the District of Columbia to use our TIF funds to the extent of the $20 million in the event that there is no congressional appropriation.
That's
correct. Something happened that I'm not aware of?
No, sir. There's a parallel action that's going straight to the board this morning, which is the budget action that talks to that specifically.
Okay. Well, you might have referenced it here because I think that the board should be assured that one way or the other this is going to be paid, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so you say the remaining budget is $1.6 million. What does the term remaining budget mean?
It's the amount of funds that aren't used or going to be obligated. For example, we've done some design work already. Those are expended funds. Find the expended funds with the projected costs, and that gives you a certain amount of money, in this case $18.4 million, which means there's $1.6 million to pay for Metro's project management costs and have contingency going forward.
And where do you propose that money to come from?
That's within the budget.
So that's within the budget. Right. So all $20 million, so that's why remaining seemed a little...
Yeah, we've talked about this format in the past because it makes it look like we've got a proposed budget of $20 million, but we're really only proposing to spend 18.4 of it, and that's not, in fact, the case. I mean, we would hope to spend as little of it as possible, but we think that the overall cost is in the $20 million range, but it's an estimate, and so whatever is under that would be returned to the District of Columbia.
Okay, my final question, I'm a little puzzled about the process here. On page 37, don't we have a board meeting at 11 o'clock? Okay.
Yes,
and this is an action item for the board meeting?
If the committee forwards it, yes, this would then be.
Then why is this matter to be further discussed at the real estate executive session?
There are certain...
What am I missing here?
There are certain components of the actual real estate transaction that the board raised issues about that we are going to brief the board on how that was incorporated into the transaction.
But doesn't the board action on this, if should this committee make the recommendation for this action to the board, and should the board act, we have taken all the actions, have we not? Is there another action that is somewhere lurking here that I don't know about?
It has to do with the sales agreement. And Gary, I think Gary would be better suited to discuss.
I think
that.
We should know what the, because I thought we had already taken care of that.
Would you prefer to postpone this action to the next meeting?
Oh, no. I appreciate your helpful suggestion. we could take a minute or two.
I'm prepared to be guided by your wishes in this matter, Mr. Graff.
Excellent. That's very reassuring.
I think the piece we're missing is that there is a real estate committee meeting planned after this meeting and before the board meeting.
Oh, it's something to be slipped in here before the two meetings.
Yes, well, it's planned to be right before the board meeting. So there will.
I don't think we'd agree with that terminology.
Well, it's your pill.
Right.
It's your pill. So this is our usual. So we're going to leave this meeting and then go into our executive session,
right.
And then we're going to come down for the board meeting with all of this in
yes.
one piece.
That's
that,
correct.
Okay, that's what I didn't.
I think, of course, that was when we were on a schedule where this committee would begin at 9 o'clock. We didn't have a quorum until past 9:45, so there went the time we would have done that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Yule.
Just to give some advice or suggestion to my colleague here, who's looking for ways to ensure that the contractor completes this project by April of 2008. with that 1.6 or whatever it was, money's left over, which is DC funds, you can certainly offer a bonus to the contractor as an incentive.
Do we have the 1.6?
It's in your $20 million.
Well, that's what's in there, but if we don't spend it, yeah.
Oh, that's
your call.
It's a good idea.
That's your call.
We do have incentives.
you want the carrot. Well, a carrot might not be a bad idea.
Instead of just a stick offering.
Because the stick is usually not very effective.
Exactly.
We never actually collect on the stick side. Yeah. It's always good at the front end to talk about liquidated damages, but
well,
we don't collect on.
Mr. Zimmerman, would it be possible for us to have an intention established at this point, and we can go forward with the action, even though that might be added more fulsome detail at a later point?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, what you're approving is the authority for the general manager to execute a construction agreement, and that could be included in the construction agreement as long as we don't exceed the budget.
Exactly. Can I make that amendment?
We don't have a motion yet, so
no,
it's not
I move to approve.
Mr. Graham moves to approve.
I would further move to amend the motion that I've just made to incorporate the position or the recommendation that Mr. Tangelini says.
Which is to allow the general manager to include incentives to meet the construction deadline as part of the construction agreement.
All right, that's the motion. Bear in mind, this is all the district's money.
Well, right, and I would. There'll be some parameters to that incentive later on.
Yeah, we have to live within the budget and certainly deliver the project. And at
no.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, it's...
To be determined.
Yeah.
Right. Parameters of the incentives to be determined.
The district's project within the district's budget, so I think we're happy to support.
But we want to be on record that we will determine the parameters.
I'm sorry, I need to clarify. We're not coming back for a subsequent board action for those
just
parameters.
Just inform us of
we will be. Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Asking for that, but I just wanted, right. I didn't want the record to suggest that whatever the balance of the budget was would be the incentive.
No, we have every interest in returning as much as possible to the district at the same time as delivering the project on schedule.
And are we going to need a real estate executive session on this before we act?
Yes.
All right. And we have a real estate public session?
Yes.
So why don't we give people an idea of when we think the board meeting is likely to occur today?
Could we finish this motion first?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Mack.
Could we get everything we have done by 11:30?
Let's shoot for it.
Yeah. So we'll have the board meeting at 11:30.
It's going to be fast, but we'll do our best.
We'll go right into real estate.
Question is on the motion, Mr. Graham, seconded by Mrs. Mack, as amended. Further discussion?
We haven't passed the amendment.
What's that?
I don't think we passed the amendment.
I'm sorry. Is there any objection to the amendment as proposed by Mr. Graham? Hearing none, the motion is amended. Question is on the motion as amended. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. I think that concludes the business of this committee. I would suggest we go immediately into real estate. I will hand the gavel over to Mr. Deegan. And
adjourned.
Okay.
Yeah, fine. Thank you.